the sort of classic golden age era of the anime dub. And it's been such an honor. I got to meet the lovely Amy Howard Wilson, who was Nova in Star Blazers, who was also just a wonderful human being in her own right. She's just, I love her. She's one of the warmest, kindest human beings I've ever had the pleasure to meet. Of course, Rick Hunter from Robotech, Tony Oliver is now a great friend of mine, and I'm hugely honored by that. It's been crazy, but those are the shows, just to name a handful. Anime sort of came in waves, and I caught the first wave. The second wave, I think, came in the 90s with shows like Pokemon, which, of course, by then I was a little too old, I think, to be the target audience for what was really popular with the anime crowd then. Though I found my way back into it in the late 90s with Cowboy Bebop, which, of course, is one of the greatest dubs ever made for one of the greatest anime ever made.
And, indeed.
You know, I've gotten to meet both Steve Bloom, who is now a good friend, and Mary Elizabeth McGlynn, who is the director for that dub and who just really sort of changed the playing field for every actor in the business. I consider Cowboy Bebop to be the first great dub of our generation.
Indeed. And I would definitely agree to you. And for those of you who've never seen Cowboy Bebop, get it. It is one of the greatest series of all time by far.
Yes.
But you said earlier also, especially about the mature content. I mean, especially considering this was the 80s, you know, it was the age of family entertainment. And here we are with this very mature content being seen by young people. You know, what do you think about that being, you know, what do you think about anime just being that trailblazer for that kind of content, which, I mean, now we start seeing today, you know, we see it more and more on Nickelodeon and Cartoon Network today. But, you know, back then it was like anime was the only place you could get, like, you know, something that kids could watch that literally they were treated like mature adults. In some regards.
That's true. I don't know that that's the case anymore because the landscape has changed so much. I think when I was a kid, I was going to say when we were kids, but I think I might be a little older than you. So I won't stuff you in the same category. But when I was a child,
feel free.
Many, many moons ago, back when we used to watch our cartoons on cave walls by torchlight, anime was it was marketed differently. It wasn't marketed as anime. It was basically some guys over here had encountered it and thought, hey, this show would be really, really good if we just slap an English dub on it and, you know, market it on Saturday morning cartoon time, which would never happen now. Now the landscape has changed so that anime is accepted and marketed as anime, and that's its chief sort of strength in with regards to how it fits into the mainstream, is that, oh, it's anime, so it represents, you know, it represents Japan. It's not incidentally Japan the way anime was for us when we were children. Now, as we grew up and we started, you know, realizing what anime was back when it was called Japanimation, oh, dark times, we'd go out and find the stuff, but this was stuff that was never put on television. This is stuff that you could find like the clamshell case for, you know, in some little mom and pop home video store, you know, behind the black curtain where they also kept the porn. Sometimes that was just the nature of how they handled it because it was so alien and so strange. But now everything, entertainment in general is very, very compartmentalized because you have this volley of channels and outlets now. You have, not only do you have millions of television stations, all of which, you know, have a variety of content and, you know, throughout the day, but also you have things like Netflix. You have, you know, you have all these, you know, streaming video things. It's a lot easier. Like, audiences now, encounter anime generally in a different way. I just happened to find it because I was sitting at home watching television and it happened to come on like after Scooby-Doo or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, and now kids largely find it, well, not just kids, people largely find it, you know, through word of mouth. They'll hear someone say, oh my God, have you seen this show? You should check it out on Netflix or, you know, go find it on Crunchyroll or whatever. And so it's different. Like the way it's received over here, it's far more self-consciously Japanese than it was in the 80s. In the 80s, I think production distributors here tried to tend to play that down a little bit because they didn't want parents to be offset by the fact that their children were watching something produced in a foreign land. I'm not sure why that was a problem, but it seemed to be. And now that's very different. Now anime is anime it's very, very different. And I've kind of lost the thread of where we were going with this. So forgive me.
No worries. But well, actually, I mean, on that point, I mean, do you think it was because back then it was so much of a, you know, it was the time of Made in the USA, you know, it matters kind of thing, you know, look for the Made in USA label. Whereas now, I mean, we're in a global economy. Maybe, you know, do you think that anime might have been more approved because we are in a global economy now?
I think you're right. I think we also – the internet has also changed everything. I mean, the internet has made – has kind of turned us into that global village for good or ill, you know. So all these things from different, you know, countries are now available in a way that we never would have had access to, particularly as young people growing up. And now young people have more access because they're often more proficient at sort of surfing the web options to find these things. Than adults who used to kind of set the tone for the entertainment their children watched. And I think parents now have a little less of a grip on that. And that's, you know, it's neither good nor bad. It's just changed things. But yeah, we kind of live in this weird sort of noosphere now where so many different things are available to us because they're just sort of free-floating out there. You know, people watch anime, they now watch, you know, I mean, all over the world, people not only watch anime, they also watch, you know, Bollywood dramas and soap operas. They watch telenovelas, you know, all these things that are now just kind of out there and much easier to come by, much easier to learn the existence of than when we were kids. So, yeah, I don't know that we were necessarily jingoistic as in the 80s, like, oh, it's got to be American. I just think it was harder to come by that stuff because someone would have had to literally pack it up in a crate and, you know, shunt it over here, and someone would have it at great expense, you know, back in the days of, you know, the logistics of transporting bulky atoms and things like that. But now everything is web-based, so it's much easier, which is – it's just interesting to consider. I hadn't really thought about that until we started talking, and now I'm like, oh, yeah, that – it is kind of interesting how the landscape has changed and made so many things accessible. It's certainly made my career possible. Actors used to work on anime dubs back in the 80s and even in the 90s, you know, there wasn't a way to make a living doing primarily that because there wasn't enough of them. And there were still quite a few, but nothing like the influx we see now. I mean, I do some commercial voiceover work, but I live in Dallas, not in LA, so it's not quite the shooting range of just work that LA is. But I mean, I have made my living chiefly writing and adapting and acting in anime dubs, which I think was unthinkable in the 80s. So that much has changed also.
Right on. What would you like to – I think now let's get down to, you know, the reason for the season and that being the characters you portray. Mm-hmm. Of course, most of everyone in this – in the group would know his characters very well. Some of the more obscure ones to some, such as Erwin Smith on Attack on Titan, Dr. Gel from Space Dandy, to the more popular Doro from Sergeant Frog, and France on Hitalia. But of course, the one role you are known for and the one that everybody, when they go to your autograph table, is asking you to basically speak into their cell phone microphones, that of Sebastian from Black Butler.
Oh,
so
yes.
Let's begin with that. Sebastian.
Otherwise known as You Know Who. Yes.
Otherwise known as You Know Who, the Demon Butler. How did you come up with that voice?
Well, it was, you know, I have a lot of experience doing accents just from my days on the stage, you see, and that is just, it's fun sometimes. An accent, accents in general can be very difficult to work with. I mean, if you're playing a role and you're choosing to do so in an accent that's not your own, the risk is, of course, that unless you're very, very versed in that accent, the accent becomes about 80% of your performance, and that leaves only 20% to to devote to the rest of what you ought to be doing, which is getting inside the character's mind and their intentions and where they're grounded, what their motivations are, et cetera, et cetera. But if you happen to be really, really good at a certain accent, then it can be very liberating. You'll take chances as an actor that you wouldn't in your own voice, in the same way that I suppose you might do things in costume, just at a party that you'd never dream of doing without that costume. So an English accent actually comes very, very easy to me because getting back briefly to my days when I was struggling with my stutter, my speech therapist, my speech pathologist was a little British lady. And I mean, very proper British, received pronunciation. Everything came out very, very crisp and clean and precise. And so she would speak to me like this for great lengths of time, and I sort of just picked up her accent. And since I was, you know, born and raised in Texas, but not that you'd know it from my accent, because I didn't really, the stutter, I didn't have a chance to develop the Texas accent because I learned to speak from a British lady. So in a way, Sebastian, that voice, I thought, well, God, here's a butler, and he's a classical butler. He's the sort of, I mean, if this were, it's like, I think of Black Butler as kind of a dark, Tim Burton-esque version of of Batman, with it's like a cross between Batman and Beetlejuice and a few other things, and of course the Faust legend, but it's quintessentially British. And so Sebastian had to be British. We all decided he had to be British, as did CL, as did everyone else in the show that was from Britain. And so I thought, well, let's just do this. We'll make him very proper and very much a butler with that very silky smooth